Welcome to another episode of The Brand Called You, a video and podcast show that brings you leadership lessons, knowledge, experience, and wisdom from hundreds of successful individuals from around the world. Today, I'm privileged to welcome a very, very accomplished entrepreneur, Mr. Aditya Gupta. Aditya, welcome to the show.
Thank you.
Aditya is the owner of the Rug Republic, as well as the owner of Sharda Exports and the Furniture Republic. And interestingly, in 2019, at the age of 50, he scaled Mount Everest. So Aditya, what would you say are three key milestones in your life or your career?
And the first important, I can think of three things which genuinely changed my life and the way it was where it was going. The first one would be when I got admission IIT Roorkee. It was University of Roorkee at that time. Now it's called IIT Roorkee.
Yeah.
And that completely changed not only my life, but the way I look at life, the people around me. You know, it exposed me to a whole new world of opportunities and genuinely accomplished people. The second important milestone in terms of professionally would be 1991-92 when we did our first Domotex, that is the international trade show for floor coverings in Germany, and that was in 1992 January. So that was my first trip abroad. That was my first sort of work-related effort, and it completely exposed me to the world and completely changed the track of my personal life as well as a career. And the third one, I think lately, more recently in 2013, when me and my brother decided to restructure our businesses. So for the first about 20 years, we worked together as a team and we built a couple of different businesses, and God has been very, very kind to both of us. Mm-hmm. And in 2013-14, we decided to restructure all our family businesses and, get individual ownership of different businesses. We did not split any individual business into two parts. Mm-hmm. They were messy. So it was a good family sort of a restructuring because, children growing up, we are all, doing different things. So then you suddenly, instead of two people running a joint show, you became one person running, a smaller number of things, but slightly become very different.
Sure.
Between two owners and a single owner.
Absolutely.
So I guess these three important milestones.
Very interesting. So let's move on and talk about your journey as an entrepreneur. You built your father's business into a multi-hundred crore brand. Which were the core businesses and how did you add more related businesses?
Well, our parental business, I mean, my father and his parents were cold storages and ice factories.
Okay.
So that is something which we still don't know too much about. My father still runs it more as an emotional connect than a business proposition, really.
Right.
Our parents started manufacturing rugs in our family home in 1983. I was in class 10.
Okay.
And that became the seed to create the small sapling, which was ready when we finished education, me and my brother. So I finished MBA in 1992. Mm-hmm. After Roorkee, I was at FMS. So that time was still a very small operation, but they did the hard work of planting a seed in a unlikely location like Meerut, because Meerut is not a carpet manufacturing area. Mm-hmm. So we were lucky to have, an excellent education and then having a starting point, which was there. It had been around for a few years. So we knew the product, we knew the people. It was very small scale, but it was ready to go. Mm. After that, we've tried to add various things and we've added furniture manufacturing, we've added quite a few real estate development projects. But I think more importantly, we've also, innovated on the business model of exports itself.
Okay.
So carpet exports, but also creating a brand, where it sells by our own name in 85 countries. These kind of things are not so commonly done in the Indian export scenario. Right. So various interesting offshoots, different ideas, as well as different ideas within the main idea.
Very interesting. And as you were growing your business, what were some of your key challenges?
Well, I would say, A, when you're scaling up, so when you start from a small town with a very small scale and then you scale up, so that scaling up in a handmade business, because everything is directly proportional to the number of people you can employ and handle.
Mm-hmm.
So there wasn't any machinery, there wasn't, you know, at that time there wasn't so much funding issues, but our business is not so much dependent on funding. It's more dependent on the execution ability to manage hundreds and thousands of people and deliver with a high degree of reliability, because export business thrives on two things, creativity and reliability, because we are a home fashion sort of design business. So we never looked upon ourselves as being in the rug business, but always in the home fashion business. So fashion is about creativity, but then the export business is about reliability and like guaranteed on schedule, on quality, like to the T. And executing that from a small place with hundreds or even thousands of people at that time, I think that became one of those things. But it was an exciting journey, and you know, can't complain.
And you know, for the thousands of people who will listen to our conversation, what were some of your key learnings as you scaled up?
Well, there are two things, so two parts to the learning. First is that business, obviously, I mean, growth is sales led. So sales comes from creativity and reliability. You know, once your creativity is known or becomes known, that is easy to show in a 20-minute conversation or a presentation. You know, you can convince somebody about your creativity. Mm-hmm. But the real business happens on reliability. So if you are not spending a huge amount of effort and be very, very, very particular about how trustworthy you will be, because eventually business is, you know, driven by trust. Sales is driven by trust, because again, exports, B2B, we are dealing with the finest brands in the world. Mm-hmm. Not only do they have a very high bar on how suppliers must conduct themselves, but also a very high bar on how the results of what they do should match with standards, as well as, you know, the other aspects of on schedule and the packaging and all of those things and the presentations. So I think those two will be important. The other, obviously, in the people's business, you have to make sure that on the one hand, you can drive people to work. So I am not a believer that you can really run an operation efficiently if nobody respects you enough or cares for you enough. I mean, your work should carry some weight. So it's democratic, but still there has to be some sort of a pyramid within that democracy. And at the same time, their creativity and their enthusiasm should come from inside. So that balance is a dynamic balance.
Wow.
You know, sometimes you have shipments which are stuck and you must work through the night, and then it should just happen. It should not be, you know, that you have issues with those kind of things. I think that is that's a fine balance between how you would run. On our business, on the front end is very cutting edge because it's world home fashion. It's going in the finest trade shows in, you know, very, very prestigious location. And on the back end, it's very traditional. And in the middle, there is this management. So our management is kind of modern. Our manufacturing is very traditional. And then our customer side is very modern.
Correct. Very interesting.
I think bridging those worlds is exciting and is also a huge learning.
Very interesting. So before I move to some other point, tell me about your three brands, which we spoke about, the Rug Republic, Sharda Exports and Furniture Republic.
So, starting with the last one, the Rug Republic is the latest offering. So that is emerged from Sharda Exports, is a classic export business which will sell to other people in the world with their brand name. So we sell in about 85 countries, and the finest brands around the world are our customers. But then establishing a brand, I think, becomes eventually the holy grail of any manufacturer.
True.
So in 2013-14, when we restructured our business, we wanted to take this into this new direction of creating your own brand where you control the collection, you control the pricing, you control the distribution. And eventually, you see, Indian export, carpet export, seen as about 4,500 exporters. So it is a little bit of a move from the red ocean to the blue ocean of branding, where yes, it is an effort, it's an investment, it's a bit of a risk. But eventually, once you are sailing, then you are not constantly being crowded by, you know, different kinds of competition. So therefore, the competition is there, but it's more global, it's a different scale. And it has been a very good move because it's allowed us to get a lot of different styles of customers. It is healthier margins. And it is opening many new avenues. And once you learn the branding game and the distribution game, then that is something that you can replicate in more businesses.
Absolutely.
So I think that is the exciting part on the Rug Republic. Sharda Exports, as I said, is a classic export thing. The Furniture Republic is a furniture retail business. Okay. The vision there was to build a national chain of stores which give good value but high creativity and high design sense. That retail part of us, I think, has been challenging, because as an exporter, getting into retail completely changes your mindset. Mm. And that change has not been so easy for me to take so far. Okay. So I'm not so proud of what we've achieved so far in the Furniture Republic. But let's see what the future holds.
Well, good luck. So, you know, let's move on. You're building some amazing businesses. You come from a traditional family of successful businessmen. What are some of the core values you have believed in?
Well, I would say that core values, first thing is being trustworthy. Mm-hmm. You know, that applies to all your relationships, business relationships with your client, with your stakeholders, as well as with your employees. So I think for me, that is number one. And building trust actually kind of encloses within itself so many different aspects. You can't build trust if the other things are not in line.
Okay.
So that would be number one. And number two is obviously about how we share the benefits of what we do. Because as I said, we are in a very, very people-centric business.
Correct.
We need control, but we also need internal motivation. We also need that sort of enthusiasm where I am not always, you know, sort of staying in the factory or something. People have to do their own things.
Mm-hmm.
So the management ideas and management techniques as well as strategy has to be very, very people-centric. It has to be people-centric in any business, but in our business, I think even more so.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
So I would say those two things.
Okay. And in a business which is, you know, spread across so many markets and with so many thousands of people working for you, what would you say is your leadership style?
You know what? My leadership style has evolved over the years. So I would say that when I was younger, I was just getting, you know, onto it, and you have this whole new thing about exports and being exposed to these global brands.
Mm-hmm.
That time you are a lot more control oriented,
mm-hmm,
because you are there physically and the business scale is such that you can actually be everywhere physically. And then over the years, you know, physical control is impossible.
Correct.
And also with age, I think you kind of evolve and you learn different aspects of human relationships and how there are other ways of getting things done besides being physically present and besides being a very sort of a forceful kind of leader. But I think it has changed from in the last 20 years. And now it's a lot more about building the incentive systems, building the motivational goals, and letting people do, and a lot of review and a lot of goal setting and a lot of controls through data management and through direct feedback from important stakeholders, including clients.
Interesting. So let's now move on and let's talk about your passion of your travel event and adventure. You scaled Mount Everest. What motivates you to push yourself to take on so many challenges, and how do you prepare for such an amazing expedition?
So I would say two parts to your question. One is what motivates me.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I think I have been a nature lover and an adventure lover right from college. Again, one of those things that was sort of, I got in gift from IIT Roorkee, because when I got there was a club called the Himalayan Explorers Club,
mm-hmm,
or attached to that. And that was my start of my nature trips. And then gradually, once you get attracted to a field, you start sort of, you know, nudging the envelope and you're pushing the envelope of your comfort zone. But I have seen that adventure has so many parallels to business.
Mm.
You know, entrepreneurs can learn so much from these adventure trips.
Mm.
That keeps you kind of engaged in a very productive way. It's not only a leisure activity. It is a leisure activity, no doubt.
Sure.
It recharges you and sort of energizes you. But it also trains you,
mm-hmm,
in ways that no business school, no books, no seminars, no nothing can train.
Mm-hmm.
And why I say this is because, you see, when you are out there, let's say Everest, you're risking your life.
Okay.
In business, the maximum risk you're taking is probably money.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so if you are comfortable with risking your life, and over the years you begin to believe that you can take the risk and you come out fine, then that ability gives you a lot more comfort in terms of the business risks. Now, the second part about the preparation,
mm-hmm,
98% of climbing mountains on any serious adventure is your mind.
Wow.
It's your attitude. It's not your physical abilities. And 98% being mind is not something which you can prepare in 6 months, 1 year, or, you know, it is something which you build upon step by step by step over the years. So you have it and then you build upon it. And then experiences kind of encourage you. But yes, physically, I did start about a year in advance before Everest. I have almost always been an overweight person. I still am. But I trained heavily. I you know, met with nutritionists, improved my eating from the perspective of not losing weight, but actually, you know, because then nutrition is a very different thing from, you know, calorie counting. So that I took a more scientific approach to it. And I think that helped me in general. Not only at Everest, but it is the lifestyle adaptation that is, you know, better done sooner than later, but 50 years was not too soon.
Amazing. But, you know, Aditya, in a country like India, which is primarily or predominantly risk averse, you know, we've never been taught by our parents to go and do all kinds of challenging things, etc., because it's always been study, come and join the business or start working. How do you prepare yourself to take on such risks?
Again, I think it's a natural sort of a, but in terms of, you know, how would I say, or how would I do it, or how I do it in my own? I look at risk also a little bit like a portfolio approach. Like, you know, when we manage our assets or we manage our wealth, we have to take a portfolio approach. So there are some things which you take very conservative. So there is a certain percentage of your portfolio is very conservative assets.
Correct.
Then you have some moderate risk and then some high risk. Because you have some conservative assets, you are able to take the high risk calls also. Everything we do is high risk. You know, then you're just pushing your luck and one fine day out. And if everything you're doing is too conservative, so similarly in business or in life, if you can build that very clear portfolio of how you will manage aspects. So I think for me that approach works the best. So in business there are some core assets, cash cows, you know, which you don't want to mess around with. I don't even offer them as collateral to raise money. I mean, that is something which out of bounds even from me. So, you know, if you have that security in mind, then you know that there is a certain amount that you can always, you know, play around with.
Right.
And to your boundaries, try your luck, try your new ideas, you know, but never avoid, if you're not failing enough, if you're not, if I'm not, you know, failing at things and things are not working out, that means I'm too much in my comfort zone. And I find it life very, very boring in the comfort zone. So well, for me, comfort zone is something to come back to, but not live.
Very well said. Very well said. So let's now move to the last segment of our conversation, which is some questions for you personally.
Sure.
So Aditya, as you, from where you stand today, having, you know, built a great business, climbed Mount Everest, done amazing things, what does success mean to Aditya as you stand today?
Ah, that is a very philosophical one. But, you know, on an instant basis, I would say firstly for me, success is being free of petty issues in life. You know, so besides the metrics of it, which can be different from different people. But if I'm not free of petty issues, I don't know what else could it be, you know. And then on the, you know, it's about space. It's about a certain degree of luxury. Mostly it's about freedom. Mostly it's about impact. So I would say, you know, one is freedom from petty issues. That for me is number one. Number two, obviously, is the freedom to work the way you want, when you want, how much you want, etc., etc. That is a part of the financial success. Again, it's not to do with how many zeros are there in your bank account.
Correct.
But what you think about where you are. Because that number of zeros is a very, very debatable, you know, and it's very individual.
Absolutely.
And then very importantly is the impact. You know, so if there is impact on people, on surrounding, on family, on your city, on your country, I mean, you know, on the world for some lucky people. So I would say these three things.
Very interesting. And a follow-up question from that is, who or what inspires you?
Well, again, it is so many different people and different things for different ideas. So in business, there are different things you come across. And I look at a lot of different videos, TEDx. So I don't have one hero or one person or three people that I follow regularly.
Sure.
But I keep myself very, very interested and very aware of different kinds of people. Mm-hmm. And I make notes of things.
Okay.
So I don't like just feel inspired and then let it go.
Mm-hmm.
I make notes in my phone.
Mm-hmm.
Typically in the flights, in the long distance flights, or even sometimes shorter flights, I have this habit of going back to the notes.
Mm-hmm.
So to the books, those, all of those things. So I keep trying to preserve them.
Mm-hmm.
And try to see, and every time I go back through my phone, I don't see new things, but I see things which excite me again. So that is one way. But then different people or different things for different aspects of life. Personally, you know, my wife is also very inspirational because she's very, very calm and she's very focused on what she does. In the mountaineering zone, I have friends, I've had people who I would have not got on to Everest. I mean, if somebody knew me in school or even in college, this guy would never be somebody who Everest. But then you get inspired from situations and people.
Correct.
And in business and in sort of knowledge, there are a lot of different things that I see on from different people.
Very interesting. So I've got time for two more questions for you. My next sure. question to you is on failure. You did talk about failure a few minutes back. But, you know, and I have a new book coming out on failure. I've often said that Indian parents or South Asian parents don't teach children it's okay to fail. We are always told first on a hang, be at the head of the line, etc., etc. And that, I believe, starts manifesting itself in our behavior patterns as we grow up. Yet we fail. My question to you, Aditya, is what have been some of your learnings from some of your mistakes?
Most important question you asked today, I think, is this one.
Mm-hmm.
As you said rightly, there is some sort of a stigma around failure.
Right.
Whereas I already said it before you asked.
Mm-hmm.
That if somebody not failing at anything,
mm-hmm.
then they are living in their comfort zone only.
Mm-hmm.
So for me, I think, again, that portfolio approach to life
mm-hmm.
and that portfolio approach to failures in different aspects, physical, spiritual, financial, business, social.
Mm-hmm.
So one has to try things. One has to elevate your game. And I have failed at quite a few different things, you know. Sometimes I genuinely think it was 100% because of me. Sometimes it was just circumstantial. In the business side, some of my partnerships didn't work out too well. On the personal side, I would say sometimes some of my ideas have been too much. I mean, maybe it's a euphemistic way of saying, but sort of ahead of time, we build a business park and people say it's a great idea, you know. But if you are not in sync with the market, and you don't have an endless supply of funds to push your idea and even enthusiasm sometimes. So I think that kind of thing is having a reality check constantly and not being so wedded to your idea that you would just sort of, you know, go ahead and then discover some things which were inappropriate way too late in life.
Mm-hmm.
And that is something which comes around very well on mountaineering, on Everest, for instance.
Mm-hmm.
On the one hand, you need to be very determined. Completely wedded to the idea of making it.
Mm.
On the other hand, you have to be very, very closely in touch with what your body and mind are telling you.
Mm.
Most of the deaths happen because people didn't turn around too soon.
Mm.
Or let's say they didn't turn around when they should have.
Mm.
But they didn't, but they turned around too late. So that self-awareness of when to take the stop-loss decision
mm.
so that you are ready for the next shot.
Mm.
You're ready to come back instead of dying with your dream. So I am not wedded to the idea of dying with your dream and that bravado sort of thing. You know, life is organic.
Mm.
Life is not linear. Life evolves. You have to let life evolve. You have to let things happen.
Anyway.
You have to come back, go back again, you know, try again, try it differently. But if you don't kill yourself because of one idea, then I don't know how much other stuff that I could have done. And I got killed doing that one idea.
Fascinating. Very fascinating. So my last question to you now, and this is for the thousands of people who will hear all that you've just said and spoken to me. What would your advice be to a young entrepreneur who's starting off on her or his journey in life?
Well, for me, entrepreneurship is one way of living. It's a little bit living on the edge because it's not only exciting, but it's also exhausting.
Mm-hmm.
And I say that it's a marathon. So we prepare, be prepared for an entrepreneurial ride like you want to be prepared for a marathon. It's not a sprint. Well, most of the career building is not. But the one thing that I feel prepares me and prepares many others that I watch is how to have that balance. So keeping balance of different aspects of life gives me the energy to keep on. I don't have any concept of retiring or, you know, sort of goal setting in the sense of something being final. It's a journey. And if my balance of different aspects of life is in place, then I'm a happier man. I take time for my personal stuff. I take time for the family, take time for the business. So entrepreneurial, sometimes, you know, you can be very, very dedicated and you can do a lot of things, but you don't want to burn out doing that. Right? And the burnout stories are not so commonly known.
Yeah.
And at the same time, so you have to take time for your family, you have to take time for life and keep going step by step by step. And failure is okay. Changing ideas is okay. Changing strategy is okay. It's just life. Absolutely. Enjoy it, you know, balance it and sort of keep playing.
Amazing. Aditya, thank you so much. You know, I've really enjoyed my conversation with you. You know, some points that you made when you climb Mount Everest, 98% is in your mind. And that I had never, no idea that could possibly happen. Second amazing takeaway from you is that despite all your success, you make such copious notes on your phone on everything you see or read or listen to and then keep going back to it. It's amazing. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Ashutosh. Thank you for having me.
Thank you.
Thank you for listening to The Brand Called You videocast and podcast, a platform that brings you knowledge, experience, and wisdom of hundreds of successful individuals from around the world. Do visit our website, www.tbcy.in, to watch and listen to the stories of many more individuals. You can also follow us on YouTube, Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter. Just search for The Brand Called You.